Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. Audible.com is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners one free audiobook. You can see this offer, as well as a list of every book guests have recommended on the show, at beyondtheuniform.io/books. That's beyondtheuniform.io/books. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 74 with Christopher Perkins.
Yeah, so I guess I leveraged the skills that I learned in the Marine Corps, and literally I just started kicking in doors. When I got to New York, I had to figure it out, and I had to figure it out quickly. So again, it was all about establishing that network. I called people, I learned from them, and I started whittling down exactly what I wanted to do. There are things that a veteran can control, there are things that you can't control. I couldn't control my technical proficiency at the time because I just got out of the Marine Corps. But darn it, I could control how hard I could work. So I was the first one in every morning. I was the last one to go at night. And I was studying like crazy.
The top three reasons to listen to today's show are, number one, senior finance. Christopher is at one of the most respected financial institutions in the world. So if you're at all interested in the finance industry, this is worth a listen. Number two, explanation. Christopher gives great advice on how a veteran can explain their background. He managed to land a senior position at Lehman Brothers directly out of the military. He did it by being an expert storyteller, and his advice for veterans is fantastic. Number three, financial collapse. Christopher talks about what it was like on Wall Street during the financial collapse and how his military training paid off, keeping him calm and stable when the world around him seemed to be falling apart. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss and an overwhelming list of resources that will help you in your civilian career. You'll also be able to get a free audiobook of your choosing from audible.com. Check it out. And with that, let's dive in to my interview with Christopher Perkins. Well, joining me today in New York is Christopher Perkins. Chris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
So quick background for listeners. Christopher is the managing director and the global head of OTC clearing at Citi. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he earned a Master's of Arts in National Security Studies from Georgetown University. He then served as an officer in the Marine Corps for over 9 years. After the Marines, Christopher worked at Lehman Brothers as their U.S. head of derivatives intermediation. He's also the co-founder of Veterans on Wall Street, an initiative dedicated to honoring former and current military personnel by facilitating career and business opportunities in the financial services industry. So, Christopher, I always like to start out asking, at what point did you know you were going to leave the Marine Corps, and how did you approach that decision?
Hey, Justin, thanks for the question. So it was back in 2004. I was in 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines, and experienced some of the more difficult fighting during the war in Iraq, pretty heavy urban combat. My unit took a number of casualties. It was really one of the highlights of my Marine Corps career, and it was an incredibly formative time for me. And after that, I came back to California. I took command of an artillery battery and was commanding 130 Marines and sailors. At that time, I realized that most of my goals in the Marine Corps had been met. And the only thing I knew in my adult life was the military. And I was very interested to move on and see what else was out there in life. And I think when you come through a really difficult combat period, you know, you really have a newfound respect for your life, and you really want to make the most out of it. And so I wanted to see what was out there. I wanted to jump into new challenges, and I made the decision to get out of the Marine Corps. It was a tough decision. I love the Marine Corps. I love it to this day. But I wanted to see what else was out there. I think the first thing that I had to do when I made that decision in my mind that I wanted to move forward was I had to have a really strong heart-to-heart with myself. I had to think about who I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. I had to think about what kind of career I wanted. And from there, I started looking at different industries, started reading books, and started slowly networking, trying to narrow it down a little bit. At the time, I had a brother-in-law who happened to be at Harvard Business School, and I called him up. I had no idea how to write a resume, and I think there's some really wonderful organizations now that will help prepare transitioning veterans. We didn't have that when I was transitioning. But I asked him to send me his resume from Harvard Business School. And I used that format as a base. And then I reached out to other people within my friends and really family network to start putting a resume together. I realized shortly that I was very interested in finance. Over the years growing up, I grew up in New Jersey and was always attracted to the financial services industry and the excitement of Wall Street. And so, like Cortez, I burned the ships and I moved to New York.
That's great. And I know a lot of vets go into finance. I think it makes a ton of sense. I think that nearly every veteran is just off the charts in terms of hard work, determination, a lot of things that I think are necessary to be able to cut it in finance. But one of the things that stood out for me is you managed to go directly from the Marines, not just directly into finance, but you obtained a pretty high up and very senior position at Lehman Brothers. And I'm just wondering, how did you find your way to Lehman Brothers in particular, and how did you manage to go straight out of the military to such a great role?
Yeah, so I guess I leveraged the skills that I learned in the Marine Corps, and literally I just started kicking in doors. When I got to New York, I had to figure it out, and I had to figure it out quickly. So again, it was all about establishing that network. I called people, I learned from them, and I started whittling down exactly what I wanted to do. From there, you start meeting people, then you try to get informational interviews, and I started getting in front of different people. And the next thing you know, I made it to Lehman Brothers for my informational interview. I got there because, again, it all comes down to the network, right? I knew a Marine from 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines. I served with him in Hawaii. And he had emerged as a very, very successful trader at Lehman. And so I tracked him down and I called him up and I said, Brian, I'm really interested in a job at Lehman Brothers. And he said, hey, Chris, do you have a suit? I'm like, yeah, I have a suit. He goes, do you have a resume? Yeah, I've got a resume. So he said, come on in and talk to a few people. And so I did. And I found out, and I always knew it, that Wall Street at the time, it's still to this day, it's a very, very patriotic culture. And I walked in that trading floor, and the energy, the excitement was really appealing to me. And I really felt like I was back in the Marine Corps, back in that COC. And I was really, really attracted to the culture. So then I sat down and I started talking to people. And next thing I know, I talked to another person. I think I probably met 12 people that day. And the challenge that I had was how was I able to communicate and translate my skills into what they were after? And I remember a couple of things. They're like, hey, what do you do in the Marine Corps? And again, they were very patriotic and supportive. They'd never met a combat veteran before. And they're trying to figure me out. And I said, well, what I do is kind of what you guys do, right? I was an artilleryman, and I said, I make very quantitative and accurate decisions, and I understand risk. But if I get my risk wrong, people die. If you get your risk wrong, you lose some money, right? And I think that theme really resonated with them. And then one guy noticed that I had a degree in national security studies, and he goes, those my securities or your securities? And I said, oh, they're my securities, but we can make it work. from there, they were interested in offering me a job. And I said, look, I want to be part of the associate class. I had done enough research to understand the different programs, and I wanted to become part of a class. I had a master's degree because the classes allow you to be trained, be part of a community, and it would be much easier than just putting me on a desk and setting me off. And at the time, Lehman said, well, we don't do that. We give our associate positions to only top MBAs, and you're clearly not an MBA. And I remember I talked to them, I said, and I don't know, they bought it, and we'll give it a shot. And the fact of the matter is, that at the time the markets were really ripping, and they could afford to take a chance on a very, very hungry, aggressive veteran. And the next thing I knew, I was in the associate class at Lehman Brothers, there with essentially the valedictorians and the top picks, class of about 30, and there I was. Immediately, I realized that I had some things, and I brought some things to the table that they didn't have, and they brought some things to the table that I didn't have, and it was really interesting. And I immediately had to just leverage again the Marine Corps and all the skills that I attained. I worked around the clock. I'd never taken an accounting class before, and I had to pass accounting for this associate class. And I worked my tail off. I passed it. I passed the Series 7. And then off I went to go around these rotations where, you know, you try to, you know, get your job and land on your desk. And at the time, and I think people will understand the history here, all the other associates, they were dying to get into mortgages. Everyone was making a killing on mortgages. And I took a different tact. I was looking for people because I knew I didn't know that much from a technical perspective, and I needed to be around people that could really train me and get me up to speed. And so I found an interesting desk. It was called Derivatives Intermediation at the time. And all I knew about it was that it was they did a lot with hedge funds and they did a lot with derivatives. And both of those, you know, words and ideas appealed to me. I thought it would be kind of cool. Wasn't entirely sure what I was getting into, but the people were awesome. And they expressed a strong interest in me. And I knew that when I landed on that desk that, you know, I would have a chance to be successful.
That's awesome. I mean, it's just really impressive to I admire your courage and not only making a leap that I think for most people is pretty far from the military to go straight into finance, but then to not only have the courage to do that, but the courage and audacity to convince them to let you into an associate class, to have that focus, to know that that's what you wanted. You did your homework, and then you had the courage to like push for it and ask for it. And I think both of those are just really admirable and really good examples for listeners about how to really advocate for yourself for what you want.
Yeah, that's totally the case. You have to be your own best advocate. But, and I'll talk about it in a second, but we've made a lot of strides in developing support networks, whether they're military veterans networks or other veteran support organizations. There are a lot of people out there. You can't do it by yourself, and they will help you along. And it's just a matter of connecting with them, clearly articulating in your direction of travel, your goals. And frankly, there's a whole community of people that veterans don't even know about that are just waiting to help them out.
That's awesome. That's great. Well, how would you explain your role as the U.S. head of derivatives intermediation, and especially what that life looked like on a day-to-day basis? I think it's always helpful for listeners to have that portrait, that view of kind of what the granular life looked like and experiences were like when you were in that role.
Yeah, so when I started on the desk, I knew that I had to get my technical proficiency up. And the first thing I did was I worked really, really hard. I would get up, I'd be the first in. Like, there are things that a veteran can control, there are things that you can't control. I couldn't control my technical proficiency at the time because I just got out of the Marine Corps. But darn it, I could control how hard I could work. So I was in, the first one in every morning. I was the last one to go at night, and I was studying like crazy. I ripped apart. I learned all about risk management, things we call the Greeks. And then my manager said, you know, it would really help you if you studied for the CFA, which is a test that you can take, a certified financial analyst. It's a very difficult test that you can take that really brings your technical proficiency up to speed. And so I would study for that at night and before work, and ended up taking that test. Meanwhile, the desk that I landed on was a startup. It was very entrepreneurial. And the one thing people don't realize about finance is that we are very diverse. There are businesses within the firm that are very mature, and then there are businesses that are startups. And I joined a startup, and I didn't really know it at the time. And so we were building a business from scratch. And I was, anytime you join a startup, you pretty much do everything, right? I was looking at risk management. I had to understand operations. I had to understand the P&L. And I really got my hands really dirty and knew the guts of this business that we were building out. And it was a new business that was being built out across Wall Street, where clients trade derivatives, and what we would do is we would essentially be the counterparty for all the derivatives that they traded, and we can give them some additional services. So next thing you know, about a year and a half goes by, and my boss decides to quit. And he did so pretty abruptly. I was on vacation at the time. This is kind of a very unique, niche-y type business. We have to find someone who can run it. And you know, as a good Marine, I raised my hand and said, well, I can do this. I know the guts of the business. It's a new business. No one has experience in it. No one has more experience than me at this point. I can run it. And it appealed to me at the time, like, leadership in the Marine Corps is easy. You learn it, and you're used to being thrust into very uncertain situations. From there, I was able to build the business out, and I think when I started, it was very young. We had like 4 clients. I was growing very quickly. I had over 30 clients, 35 clients. Things were going great, and then we went bankrupt. And this was another very formative period in my development. Going through a bankruptcy, it was a lot like having that experience in war. There was incredible stress. For me, I had perspective. It was amazing because, you know, people had been in the industry their whole careers and never had experiences like that. And now I was acquiring these new experiences. Interesting thing, the next day I got a call, and it was from Citi. And Citi said, "Would you like a job?" And I said, "Well, what kind of package do you have?" And they said, "It's a great package. It's a job." And so I called my wife and I said, "Citi is offering me a job. This is great." She said, "Well, you better get over there quickly." And I did. So the next day I started working at Citi. What an amazing experience it was for me because I started running the derivatives prime brokerage there. And so now I had this really unique experience. And I feel like I was like that last corporal who had been in the Marine Corps for, you know, a few weeks or months, who had been in combat for the first time. There was a colonel who had never experienced combat. Now I had experienced combat, and it was an incredible experience.
That's awesome. I mean, I love just the thought of how amidst something that was on a global scale very traumatic, and how I'm imagining from your experience in the Marine Corps, just keeping your head and keep it in perspective and remaining calm and keeping things under control, and then how that led to such an amazing opportunity. And I think that that's often the case in careers, that some things that could be viewed as like the biggest catastrophe and worst thing ever to happen often turns into the unexpected best opportunity that we have in life. And so I love that you saw that opportunity and you took it. And then I also just really appreciate your perspective, where looking at the wealth of experience that you learned through that and were able to bring with you to Citi. It's really, really incredible.
Hey, thanks. And so from there, things got kind of interesting because the whole world was being turned upside down. And in the aftermath of Lehman Brothers, there was a tremendous amount of regulation, laws that were passed. And the G20 in 2009 completely changed the way that derivatives were to be traded. And it just so happens that startup that I was working on in Lehman, suddenly after Dodd-Frank and the European equivalent, actually all throughout the world, that little startup actually became the law. And next thing I knew, I was in the middle of a business that had to figure out how to handle, in a very short period of time, the central clearing of an industry that was over $700 trillion in size. And again, I was a relatively junior employee. I raised my hand and I said, you know, I can do this. I may only have been in finance for a few years, but I'm a leader. I've commanded 130 Marines and sailors. I know the guts of this business because, I built it from scratch. Give me an opportunity. And Citi was tremendous. They gave me a shot. They said, okay, we want to be the best at this in the world. I want you to go out and hire the best people you can find, and we're going to invest a lot of money. I want you to build the best technology in the world. As the business started, it was very competitive. Every single client needed to have this service because it was the law. It was coming very quickly. And what would happen is they would call all the banks in. We would all line up, maybe 8 or 10 of us, and we would have to present to them on our product. So back in 2009 or so, I remember I'd come in and I'd say, "Hey, Chris Perkins, I've got this product. We have the best people. We've got the best technology. We're going to be the best at this." And at the time, as a counterparty, Citi was maybe not as strong as some of the others. And I said, and the guy after me would come in and say, "Hey, I am this bank. I'm Fortress Balance Sheet. I'm the strongest in the world. You have to do business with me." And so what we did was we really created a culture of just absolute client service. Everything's come together. And At the same time, something else was going on in my professional career that was really important, and that was the formation of the Veterans Networks at Citi, which has been a huge part of my professional career and really helped me with my professional success. So in 2009, I raised my hand and I said, look, we should have a military veterans network here at Citi. And the firm listened to me and they said, you know what, I think we'll do that. And so I wrote my bylaws, and when I launched, and again, when I made the transition, I found people were very patriotic, but there was no institutionalization of that support. So it was very hard for veterans to grasp onto something as they were transitioning. It was very informal. And this was an attempt to really formalize and institutionalize the support of vets. I found out that Citi was founded to fund the War of 1812. That was kind of cool. And I remember during my launch ceremony for the first network here in New York City, Dick Parsons showed up, who was chairman of the board. And he really didn't talk about it, and no one really knew it, but Dick was a vet. He was an Army vet, and he spoke. And by establishing that institution of a veterans network, and our job was to recruit, retain, mentor, and provide community outreach, it provided something for people to latch onto. And I found out that throughout the firm, very senior people, that maybe their dad was in World War II, maybe their cousin was deployed, people came out of the woodwork to support this network. And in the beginning, I thought we were going to have about 100, 125 people. That was my plan. If you fast forward to today, we have 16 networks across the globe. We opened one in the UK. We're an absolute force of nature. In addition to that, we decided that the networks are great, but we can do more as a company, and we launched something called Citi Salutes, which is a one-stop shop. We have a web page. It was our firm-wide initiative to help veterans and their families. In fact, recognizing the value that veterans bring, not because we're doing charity, like my firm does not exist. We're not a 501(c). We're not here to do charity. We want to recruit those veterans because we think it's good business. And we've been able to, we get better every year. It's something that really excites us. Finally, also back in the early days when we started forming, right after we formed the network, we got together with a couple senior people here at Citi, and we said, you know what? We can do something across this industry for vets, and we can put aside our competitive differences and help veterans first and foremost. We invited a number of our bank peers over to Citi Field here in New York, and we tried to establish a forum to share best practices really around recruiting. A couple of weeks later, Deutsche Bank approached us and said, hey, we want to do something for the industry for vets. And we said, so do we. We took their name, and it's now known as VOWS, or Veterans on Wall Street. This is another amazing reference for a resource for transitioning veterans. VOWS is now an organization of banks. We set out and we had two goals. Number one was to do symposiums to help transitioning vets. We've done a number of hiring fairs, and we also were Wall Street, right? So we tried to raise money. We found it very early on. We're pretty good at raising money. We raise over $1 million a year, and we had these symposiums. And over the years, we decided to embark upon a strategic relationship with the Bob Woodruff Foundation, and we've had a number of career hiring fairs. About 2 years ago, we decided to expand our membership beyond just banks, and we're now about 90 firms across financial services and beyond. And our goal is to share best practices, raise money, and also help veterans and their families with the transition. So think about the value of that veterans network through VOWS. So anyway, those are the two progressions of my career. I was running this derivatives, this industry-leading derivatives clearing business, and simultaneously working on the military veterans initiatives. They crossed often as well. I can't tell you how many clients of mine are veterans or have a close affiliation with a veteran, and it's just easier to do business.
That's incredible. And you know, I just appreciate so much of what you've done to pay things forward and to help the veteran community. And one of the things I was wondering about is between your work with Veterans on Wall Street as well as Citi's military veterans networks, I just imagine you've worked with so many different veterans in finance. And I'm curious what's like the biggest advice that you would want to give to either veterans who are currently in finance or veterans who are considering a career in finance?
Yeah, I really enjoy my career in finance, and I think it's exciting for any veteran. When you say finance, it's again, it's very diverse. We have everything from investment bankers to project managers to operations people to people in call centers and even tellers, right? So it's very important if somebody's considering a career in finance to really understand what exactly it is that they want to do. And the first thing that we do is you know, reach out to the Veterans Network locally. And again, at Citi, we've got 16 of them across the U.S. Reach out to VALS. We have a website, you know, try to find us. And the whole goal there is to begin networking to really find out what it is that you want to do. And I guarantee you, most veterans will have an informational interview with anyone. So take them up on that. Network, and really it starts with finding out what you want to do. Once you find out what it is you want to do and you're sure that your talents align with it, then it's time to really dig in. Start kicking in those doors and pushing for results. You know, you need to demonstrate a passion. You need to have technical competency. You know, you need to bring yourself up to speed. Because when we hire veterans, I'll tell you the thing that some of them do poorly is they'll come in here and they say, well, what should I do? And it's not for any of us to answer. But once a veteran understands what they want to do, you know, we will help them get there. And I think the most important thing that we're looking for, we know they're not going to be experts in finance. That's not why we're going to hire them. We're looking for people that are hungry, people that are smart, people that will leverage all those skills they acquired in the service to help our teams perform better. And, you know, the technical stuff is stuff that can be achieved through hard work. And most veterans, if they have that trait, and they should, they can get up to speed pretty quickly. So we want someone who's passionate and who's going to come in and really add value to our team as soon as possible.
And are there any common mistakes that you see veterans make or any common misconceptions they have when it comes to finance?
We want to make sure that the fit is right for the veteran, and we want to make sure that the fit is right for us. Starting off, there's two things that they need to really focus on. And then, of course, we like to see people who know what they want, and then we will help them get there. And we are very focused on not letting veterans fail.
That's awesome. And one thing I wanted to ask about is, and you touched on this briefly already, but the value of an MBA in working up the ranks within finance. And I know this is generalities, but given you know, you had a master's before, but you chose not to pursue that route, for a vet who's getting out right now and they don't have an advanced degree, how would you advise them to think about whether or not to try to pursue an MBA or go directly into finance in terms of, I don't know, maybe pros and cons on either path?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. So starting off with an MBA, MBAs are awesome because once you have that education, nobody can ever take it away from you, right? And the other thing that an MBA gives you is it gives you it further augments your network, right? So you're part of an MBA class. There are people out there that you're connected to and you network with. There is tremendous value in attaining an MBA. I didn't have an MBA. I had a master's degree. The downside, if there is, with an MBA is that it takes time to get one. So for me, I was in my 30s. I didn't want to go back to school. I wanted to jump right into it. If you want to take a couple of years, by all means, go there. And the other good thing about having an MBA is it gives you time to think, and it gives you more time to find that right fit for you. You meet more people, and you can drill into it. It comes with some costs that you need to evaluate, but the GI Bill has gotten much better in that regard. Alternatively, if you want to go straight into a job, I think you have to expedite, you know, your decision-making process. You have to have that heart-to-heart with yourself, and you have to know exactly what you want to get into.
I always think it's helpful to try and lay out for listeners, just I guess broadly speaking, possible career paths to a position like managing director at a company like Citi. And I'm wondering, it's helpful for them to hear your story, but if you know of, like, are there other typical routes that one would take or backgrounds that one would have if their aspiration was to one day be a managing director?
Yeah, I think you have to grow where you're planted, right? And so once you find that desk, the key to becoming a managing director is to grow where you're planted. So you have to start working really hard. You need to start adding value. You have to understand the goals and the mission, like just like the Marine Corps. You have to know the mission of the desk and the mission of higher headquarters. So what does their boss want? And then you have to drive that mission forward. I think it starts with understanding the business model, understanding the regulatory complex, and then really driving the P&L. Relationships are incredibly important, whether they're client relationships or whether they're internal relationships. And of course, you have to also be mindful of risk management and compliance. So that's the key. And you never stop networking. You never stop growing. You never stop studying. The markets are incredibly complex. Nobody knows everything there is to know about them. And so it just takes a massive amount of hard work, studying, and again, that word passion.
And I think it's also helpful to just for the listener to understand what your life is like. What is your day-to-day life look like? What are some of the, if there were a typical day, what would it look like?
Sure. I wake up about 5 o'clock every morning, and I'm very excited to get to work. I have my first call probably around 5:30, 5:45 with Singapore, and I find out what happened overnight. From there, I come into the office. I'm at my desk before 6:30. I'm immediately on the phone with London. I look at the markets. I look at my risk. I find out any issues that happened overnight in the European markets or in the Asian markets. From there, I work the U.S. day. What do I do typically? I could be meeting clients. I could be managing my risk. I'm responsible as managing director of my product. I'm responsible for everything my product does or fails to do. And, you know, there are things maybe away from me that occur. And if there's a fire, I go to put it out. But generally speaking, what I'm doing is I'm driving my business model forward. I'm coordinating with my management, and my manager sits over in London. And I work the U.S. day. On the way home, I'm on the phone with Australia. They get in the office around 4:30, 5 o'clock at night. And then I'm speaking to, as the Japanese get in, I'm on the phone with that team, and we are driving our business model forward. I travel pretty regularly, so the market that I work in is a global market. I spend about a week out of the month on the road. I'm generally overseas. When I go overseas, I'm speaking to my clients about the product that I run. I'm speaking to regulators, government officials, speaking about, the business that I run is relatively new. Laws went into effect in around 2011. Some of them are still getting implemented. So I'm working with industry forums to try to make this business, this new business work with a big focus on risk management. You travel, you try to also develop your people and drive your P&L. It's really exciting. And it has its challenges. The hours can be very long. But again, I really like what I do, and I really enjoy working for this firm.
It's so compelling hearing when you have an organization of city scale where you're truly a global organization. It's just incredible to hear the touch points throughout your day where you're leveraging that, where, it sounds like you're literally waking up and getting a brief from someone on the other side of the world who's been up all night, and they're able to feed you that information. And it's just, it just must be so amazing to have so many resources at your disposal like that, and have an organization that has such a diverse and global team.
Totally. And the Marine Corps really helped me. I mean, we were overseas all the time. And so it's and again, when you travel, for me, it's like being in the field. You don't sleep that much. You really focus on work. And when you come back from a trip, it feels really good for what you accomplished.
One thing just off the cuff that I'm wondering is I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for resources. And I'm just thinking of like either books or podcasts or programs or websites or anything that helped you or that you've seen help others at like Vets on Wall Street that you would recommend to a veteran listening who's interested in finance or interested in improving their career some way that they could check out today.
Yeah, I think, there are a number of different books to like things like Market Wizards. there's so much to read, right? But you can almost start by, you know, reading things like the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, and then, like, you know, you can watch CNBC, you can watch Bloomberg Television, and sometimes you can, you know, by watching those current events and watching how current events impact markets, you can kind of get a feel if that's for you, that intensity is for you. But again, I really think the best, if you have any kind of desire to be in financial services, I really compel any listener, you know, find one of us, reach out to us. We're all over the website. Go on LinkedIn and meet us, sit with us. There's nothing better than sitting down next to a guy on a desk or a lady and understanding what their life is like and ask them. But to me, that's the most important experience that someone can have. And also understand the business model, like how, what's a good day? What's a bad day? How do you get paid in this industry? It's something that nobody really likes to talk about, but you need to know. And then what's the quality of life?
And I always also like to ask about challenges that veterans face in their transition. And this could be from your own transition from the Marines to civilian life, or from all the different vets that you've worked with and mentored. But I'm wondering what challenges vets face in their transition, or what's surprising, something that they don't expect about that civilian life that listeners might be a little bit more aware of?
I mean, there are a number of challenges that you experience when you get out of the service. You immediately lose that tribe that you may have had, that unit cohesion, and you can be thrust out into your own very quickly. And I think one of the challenges that a lot of vets have is that, okay, they served in the Marine Corps or wherever for 4 years, 5 years, whatever. You don't save up a lot of money when you're in. And then, you know, a few weeks later, you're out of the Marine Corps, and the first thing that you need to do is you need to eat, and you need to find a place to live. And these are very basic things that you need to solve for. Some people have families. And one of the challenges that we have is that as veterans transition out, because they have to feed their families, feed themselves, and get that roof over their head, is that they are underemployed. And to me, that's one of the biggest challenges that a lot of veterans face. So they get out, they get that job just so they can sustain. But the goal for you is not to get a job, but to find that career. Find a career where you can start and you can grow it out, and something that you can really embrace for, you know, a good part of your life.
That's great. Now, I think that's incredible advice. And, you know, I want to keep the last question just to get your final words of wisdom. But I guess the last question I would ask is, you know, you had talked about at the start where you joined this group of associates, and you had said there was ways in which I was ahead and there was ways in which they were ahead, and we learned from each other. And that's something I'm always curious to know about, is kind of the ways in which veterans feel most behind when they start their career. So I'm wondering, what were some of the ways in which you felt like you were ahead of those associate peers when you started out at Lehman Brothers, and then some of the ways that you felt behind and had to learn from them?
It was so foreign to me when I started moving up through the ranks, and I remember I was at director's training, and there were people that I was with, and they were so nervous about managing people. And in the industry, it takes a little bit of time before you start managing people, and that first experience of managing a single person really was daunting for them. That really was hard for me to register, because I was used in the service, you get so used to managing and also leading. And so I was able to share tips with them on how to run organizations, how to efficiently run organizations, how to establish governance, how to establish leadership teams, how to effectively communicate. And these are things that are, frankly, you take it for granted when you're in the service, but they're very hard to teach, very hard to teach. And it's also very hard to teach things like how to act when you're under fire. You know, how do you continue to perform your mission? These things are very, very difficult. What I didn't have was all that technical proficiency. While I was running around Ramadi, you know, these guys and ladies were sitting at a desk. They were learning models. They were learning finance, and I had no exposure to that. Like I said earlier, the great news about the technical side of things is it's very much within one's control. You know, there you can dive into a CFA program. There is so much academia available online now, for even free of charge. So if you have the will and you have the work ethic, you can develop that technical proficiency very, very quickly.
That's incredible. And I wanted to make sure I made room just to open it up for you to share anything that we didn't cover. And I know I asked a lot of questions, but I also didn't ask a lot of questions that I'm sure you have great advice around. So knowing that you have a group of veterans listening to this show, what would you want to share with them? It could be about personal life or professional life, but what would be your final words for them?
Yeah, so when I made the transition, it was I found out that the community, and my experience was finance, but I would argue that most industries are like that. I found out that people were very patriotic and they wanted to help, but there was very little structure. If you fast forward to today, you'll find that we're much better organized as an industry, whether it's through my veterans networks here, whether it's through VOWS. There are a number of other things that have popped up. There are plenty of veteran service organizations as well, ones that specialize in helping transition veterans to find jobs, right? So just do a little bit of research, and I think it's a lot easier to tap into those resources out there, all willing to help you, and make sure that you navigate to them. Find a mentor as well. I couldn't have ever done any of my transition alone. I had people help me along the way. And make sure that you find the right types of mentors. I mean, people that I approached was in finance, some were Vietnam vets. And, you know, they had been through a lot, but they were willing to give me their time. And so, you know, network like crazy. Tap into those organizations that now exist. Find that senior mentor. And you'll do just great.
I think that's such great advice. And I know one theme that's come up on the show is how difficult it can be, or counter to a veteran's nature, to ask for help, and how in the military that's often, you know, one thing that makes vets so great is they're able to break through walls independently and with teams and just kind of do whatever's asked of them. And so that thought of asking for help or seeking a mentor can at first seem pretty foreign. And I think that you're so spot on that, of the value of finding someone much more further down the line from to learn from, and to learn from the mistakes they've made and the successes they've had, and to borrow all those years of experiences and thousands of hours of experience to help inform you on your own path. So I think that's just really great advice for listeners.
Thank you.
Well, Christopher, thank you so much for your time. I can only imagine how busy you are, but I appreciate, I appreciate the work that you've done to help out other veterans, and you've just been so proactive in doing that. And I also appreciate the role model that you are, as you forge the way ahead on the forefront of finance, in the forefront of city, and you just really are an example for many other veterans for what someone can achieve outside once they transition out of the military. So thank you for both of those.
My pleasure, and thank you, Justin, for this interview. I really appreciate it.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyondtheuniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyondtheuniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.